It's blazing hot outside. You get in your car to turn on the AC to get cold air pumping, but it blows hot air out. This issue is commonly caused by low refrigerant due to leaks in the AC system. You want an easy, all-in-one solution that will restore the cold air in no time. AC Pro Recharge Kits make restoring cold air easy for even those with zero DIY experience in less than 10 minutes. Save time and money versus going to a shop by picking up an AC Pro Recharge Kit today. Be a pro with AC Pro.
Welcome back to the MLB.com Ballpark Dimensions podcast. I am your host, Mike Petriello, a writer and researcher for MLB.com. I'm joined here by MLB.com national editor Matt Myers. And wow, we don't usually do late night emergency podcasts, but we don't usually see a game like the Yankees and Rays. Game five, this one ended like, what, 20 minutes ago, I guess? And there's just so much to discuss for that. And obviously, we're going to look ahead to a pair of really interesting league championship series. Matt, real quick before we get into game five, you know what I just realized? For all the talk about how random and ridiculous this postseason was going to be, 16 teams with three-game series, both number one seeds are still alive. How cool would it be if we actually ended up getting one seed versus one seed after all the postseason stuff is going to be a coin flip, right? Like, I kind of hope that happens now.
It seems, we can get to that later, but I think that I don't want to say likely, but that would be my guess.
This game we just watched. So the game finished Tampa Bay 2, the Yankees 1. That was one of the, wildest, most interesting. It's hard to say like best pitched in the historical sense, like you think of, you know, Don Larson's perfect game or Jack Morris going 10 innings in the World Series, because, you know, Gerrit Cole obviously only went to the sixth inning and Tyler Glasnow only went into the third inning, and there was a stream of relievers behind them. But I don't know if I can think of a more perfect distillation of what like peak 2020 baseball is, because every single guy that came out there was throwing flames to the point that when Zach Britton came out throwing like 94 mile an hour turbo sinkers, I was kind of disappointed. You know, it's like, oh, that's it? That's all you got. Here are some wild numbers from this game. So everything I'm about to say, we have pitch tracking data going back to 2008. So more than a decade. And just based on the way baseball has trended, you could probably assume this is true for the entire history of the sport, but you can only say with certainty back to 2008, 61% of the fastballs tonight were thrown at 97 miles an hour or above. 61%. If you actually go out to a decimal point, 61.2%, that is the most in a game on record. The average fastball tonight was 97.2 miles an hour. The average. That is the second highest on record, just by a tick behind a peak 2014 Royals game with Jordano Ventura and Greg Holland and Wade Davis. The average fastball is 92 miles an hour. And if you were to look at the average...
The average pitch was 92 miles an hour. Average fastball is 97.2, right?
Yes, I was going to say, then the average pitch, all pitches, breakers, changes, everything, 92.7 miles an hour. People wonder why there's so many strikeouts. And to that, I present you with a reel of this game on repeat. It is just disgusting how much velocity we saw. And you wonder why guys are trying to run into homers. What are you going to do? Rally? Are you going to string together hits against these dudes? Absolutely not. This is one of the most impressive displays of pitching I've ever seen. And I don't know, I will think about it in the same as like the Jack Morris game, but I don't think history will think about it that way.
And to your point about the home runs in this game, there were three runs scored on three solo home runs. And in fact, there were just a tick above 75%. It was like 76%, I think. I don't have the exact number in front of me. I know our colleague Sarah Langs was calculating the exact decimal, but I can say that the highest percentage of runs were scored on home runs in this series than any series in baseball history. So when you talk about peak 2020, the previous high was 75%. This was like 75.6%. The previous high was 75% in the 2001 NLDS between the Astros and Braves. The Cubs and Marlins in the wild card round was higher than that, but I don't count it because it was only two games. So in any series of five games or more, or best of five or more, this was the highest percentage of runs scored on a home run, which speaks to your point. And also what you're talking about, like, you know, the pitching and Jack Morris, like, I totally get how the excitement that comes with a classic postseason start when a guy goes like seven or eight innings and, you know, strikes out a dozen and it's just battling through the middle innings. Like, I totally get the appeal of that. I love games like that. That said, what the Rays did tonight from a strategic standpoint to me was like utterly fascinating and in many ways more interesting than your classic Jack Morris start. If you had told me before the game that they were going to hold the Yankees to one run and that their most well-rested starter, Blake Snell, was not going to pitch, I would have been like, you are absolutely nuts. But that's exactly what happened. And when they took Glasnow out after two and the third innings, when he was like, still looked pretty good. I mean, he wasn't going to get many more. I mean, he wasn't going to pitch much deeper, but he only thrown 37 pitches. And it was like, okay, well Snell's obviously going to get in this game, but no, he didn't. And that was just like a remarkable string of like the way that Rays manager Kevin Cash managed the game.
Do you know who threw the most innings for the Rays tonight offhand without looking?
Nick Anderson,
who came in the third inning and ended up throwing 2 2/3. He did end up giving up one home run. And just on the home run point real quick, 6 hits in the game tonight, 3 home runs. And that makes us so far this season the team that has hit more homers than the other team, 22 wins and 1 loss. The final game of Padres Dodgers is the only thing that screwed that up. Like a week ago, I thought that was a fun stat, and now it's gotten so played out, I'm actually kind of annoyed by it. And I think I only reference it now just because it's like a involuntary reaction to people talking about small ball playoffs. But I don't know. After having watched this game, I don't know how anybody expects anybody to hit ever again. And it was cool. Just like kind of, you know, like you said, Gerrit Cole on 3 days rest was unbelievable, right? 5 1/3, 9 strikeouts. And then, you know, followed by Britton and Chapman. I don't want to overlook one incredible player. The home run earlier in the game that was hit by Austin Meadows, right? It looked to me like Aaron Judge had a real shot at it. And then he jumped and he got his head stuck under the right field overhang in Petco. They were playing the game in San Diego, obviously. And I don't know. I don't know if he was unfamiliar with it because it's not his home field. I don't know if a 6'7" man isn't built for that. I don't know if that's just a thing that shouldn't exist in that park. But I'm always going to wonder if not for that little overhang, you know, does he take that ball back? Because I thought he had a real shot at it. Did you feel the same?
It looked like it, but it was going to be a trick. It was going to be a tricky play, but it did look like he was going to. It definitely felt like there was going to be that moment of drama where he was going to leap, and you were going to get a chance to see like, is he going to reach it? But we never actually got that moment because it ended up being almost like a blooper because his head like hit the padding and the ball was a home run. Aaron Boone has taken a lot of heat for the way this series was managed. And he certainly didn't lose the Yankees this game, but I was definitely a little surprised with how he managed it. Like I definitely like going to your best relievers as sort of as soon as it makes sense. But, you know, given the Yankees have far fewer reliable relievers than the Rays, it definitely felt like he was really stretching it by going to Britton as early as he did and Chapman as early as he did. It was kind of like, okay, well, he's going to need to get like, it was almost like someone besides Chapman is going to have to get the last out of this game. If the Yankees are going to hold on, and he sort of was kind of hanging himself out there. What did you think of his, the way he managed the game?
I was fine with the way he managed this game. And, you know, I know people are always going to go back and point to the game two with the Davey Garcia, J-Hap sort of opener pseudo thing. I didn't love that, but as far as this game, I mean, listen, Cole was great. I think he yanked Cole at the right time. I had no problem with that. You know, Britton came in, didn't allow any runs, and you know Chapman got hit hard. I mean, he ran into a fastball. That's actually good on Mike Brosseau. I can never remember. You know, I didn't really have a problem with the way Boone managed the game. And on the other side, I actually thought it was interesting. You think of like a bullpen game, or you knew Glasnow wasn't going to go that long, but Cash didn't end up with like a string of one inning relievers, four pitchers, who all threw at least 2 innings. You know, 2 1/3. 2 2/3, 2 innings and 2 innings, which is, I like that better, I think, than 9 guys going about an inning apiece like we saw with the Padres recently. This was at least a little more aesthetically pleasing to me, although I imagine a lot of people will not be satisfied, I guess, with the way that this game just looked. You know, you'd rather have Cole and Glass now dueling each other into the 8th inning, but man, I found it thrilling. Like I thought this, just watching all the incredible pitching where, I mean, who's the worst pitcher we saw tonight? Pete Fairbanks? And he's really good. He's absolutely disgusting. It's just a cool way to watch these two teams with a really, really deep pitching staff. And I think so far, this is the game I'm going to remember the most. I know a lot of people will say Dodgers Padres the other night, the one that, you know, where Joe Kelly had to end the game with and Cody Bellinger made the great play. And maybe that's true, but man, this game's going to stick with me for a while.
A couple points. I want to talk about the Brasso for a second. But I also want to, the one thing I will say about Boone, and it isn't necessarily about this game, but it's about how they manage the series as a whole. And it kind of goes back to that one inning appearance by Devi Garcia in game two. And I said it at the time to, you know, whoever my, you know, a colleagues as we were discussing the game, where it was like, my issue with the way they used Garcia in game two was that like they were almost guaranteeing he wasn't going to pitch again in the series. And that's when it ended up happening. So you ended up having like arguably your second best starter pitch one inning in the series by choice. And that is sort of, I think in retrospect, they will look back as like a big regret on the series.
No, I think that's right. I don't mind the opener strategy, but if you're going to do it, like bring in a guy who is only going to throw one inning and make that inning more valuable and therefore help J-Hap. Well, Garcia has the ability to give you more length. And I think actually more importantly, J-Hap clearly did not seem to be interested in this. You know, like if the guy's not buying in, then it, any value you might get from the strategy, I think is going to be lost because I don't think he wanted to be any part of this.
And I think that's one thing the Rays, you know, have sort of like the culture they built over the years that their players are fully bought into. I mean, they used four outfielders tonight, like multiple times. Like the Rays players have bought into what the Rays are doing as a whole with all their strategies, whether it's the opener, whether it's their shifts, four-man outfield, et cetera. So the Brasso home run, Kevin Cash, Rays manager, said it is hands down the greatest moment I've ever been a part of in baseball, which is a pretty cool thing to hear a manager say. It was the fastest pitch hit for a home run by any Rays batter in the pitch tracking era that goes back to 2008. And as you said earlier, I think we could probably safely say, period, it's the fastest pitch ever hit for a home run by a Rays batter, which is kind of incredible. Also, he has an amazing story. He was undrafted in the 2016 draft out of Oakland University in Michigan. Undrafted. There were like 1,200 people drafted in that draft. Mickey Moniak was the number one overall pick to the Phillies. And I think it is now, I don't want to say guaranteed, but it almost is safe to say that Mike Brasso is going to have a better career than Mickey Moniak, who looks just like,
yes,
kind of like a just a guy. So it is just pretty wild to think about. And it was a 10 pitch at bat. He fell behind 0-2 to Chapman. And I was just watching a little bit of the post game. Pedro Martinez was kind of speculating that, you know, last year, famously, Chapman allowed a walk-off homer in game six of the ALCS to Jose Altuve on a slider. And Pedro was kind of speculating that he was kind of afraid to go back to the slider after Brasso like pulled one foul. And then he was definitely waiting for the fastball and he hit a and turned on a 100-mile-an-hour fastball and hit it over the left field fence.
As I'm watching Twitter scroll by as we're talking, the Rays are apparently, as we're speaking, on the field celebrating with the song being played, New York, New York, which I appreciate the pettiness of that. You know, like there's a lot of history between these two teams.
And Chapman and Brasso specifically. He threw it
this year. Right, absolutely. Do you believe we've talked for like 10 minutes about this game in this series and neither one of us has brought up Randy or Rosarina yet? Because I know he didn't do much in this game. He went 0-for-3, but before that he looked like, I don't know, conservatively the greatest player who ever lived. You know, I'm sure Cardinals fans enjoyed watching Rosarina and Luke Voit in the same series.
Right. How do you think Pirates fans felt watching this game with, man, Garrett Cole pitching, Tyler Glasnow pitching, and Austin Meadows hitting the game tying home run?
That's not fair. It's not right, really. The game ending out was a line out from Gio Urshela. It came off the bat at 109.6 miles an hour. That was the second hardest hit ball of the game. And if you were to look at all of the hardest hit balls of this game, the top six of them did not result in hits, which I don't have handy like how rare that is, but I'm going to go out on a limb and say super rare, right? Like Giancarlo grounded out at 110. Adamas lined out at 108. A couple of ground outs from LeMahieu and Rosarina around 107. And then Yandy Diaz hit one at 107. That was actually an error. So he reached. But the hardest hit ball that was actually a single, a base hit, was Torres at 106.4. The home runs were not actually hit that hard. You know, like the one of them from Judge, which like barely made it out down the right field line, was only 98 miles an hour. It's like the most un-Judge home run I think I've ever seen him hit. but that's not important. Like I said, the average fastball, 97.2 miles an hour. That is just obscene. That is not safe for work, I guess. All right, so the Rays are moving on, and I guess I haven't even really had time to contemplate Rays Astros yet, but the Astros have been pretty impressive so far in the first two rounds. I think one thing you can say about the Astros for sure is that it would be pretty cool to see Dusty Baker get a ring finally. Obviously, that comes with a whole lot of other baggage for the Astros. This series will start on Saturday night. It will be in San Diego. Astros at Rays. And too soon to say who's going to pitch
Sunday, or anything. Sunday night, to be clear.
What did I say?
Saturday night. You're kidding.
Sunday night. So that one's going to be a fun series. This is going to be a 7-game series, best of 7. Like this one, there will be no days off. And I think that's going to probably be advantage Rays, because the Houston pitching staff, while better than expected, certainly has some weaknesses. Zach Greinke, we weren't even sure he was going to pitch. And can we just say really quickly, he was not telling the batter what was coming. Like, that was a big thing. He was signing to his catcher. He was saying, hey, here's the different sequences. I like Zach Greinke. I know he's kind of a weirdo. Even he was not telling the guy what the pitch was coming. Like, that is insane. And it didn't happen. Rays and Astros. What did you think of the Astros and what you saw in the first two rounds?
I thought it was like, I didn't expect the Astros to be below 500 this year, right? So I was definitely surprised by that. I mean, obviously, Verlander's injury sets them back a bit. But I thought they were better than they showed. And they definitely have been in the playoffs so far. They've played really well. Some of their, hitters, Carlos Correa in particular, have kind of found, what you would expect to be their level, which makes a big difference. And they've gotten some pretty good pitching performances from maybe some more unheralded pitchers, Framber Valdez and Christian Javier, who kind of stepped up and filled in some of the gaps for them. So that's been the pleasant surprise. The offense kind of coming around doesn't really surprise me. It's kind of what I expected. I've said this before, Bregman actually had a fine season when you consider it was a 60-game sample. Springer was good. Michael Brantley, when he's healthy, always hits. So the Astros are a legitimately good team. The high end of their pitching is going to struggle. And I think if the Rays had won in 4 against the Yankees, the Rays would have been absolute heavy favorites against the Astros. I still think they are favorites, but the fact that they sort of had to throw a lot of their best pitchers tonight and we'll have a little less rest going into game one. I think if they'd gone into game one against the Astros with a fully rested pitching staff, it would have been I don't want to say a walkover, but just an enormous edge, because the depth is so much better. Because they had to play tonight and they used, a lot, basically all their best relievers for 2 innings apiece, it definitely puts them at a disadvantage in game one. And I think that if the Astros win game one, it can become it's a series.
It was funny. Did you see in the ninth inning of this game that they had both Morton and Snell warming up in the bullpen out there? Let's see. Snell, I don't have it in front of me. He pitched on the sixth, right? So he will be probably the game one starter, I would think, on Sunday on regular rest. Does that sound right? And then I guess Morton too, and Glasnow. I don't think they would throw him on short rest, would they? We'll have to see how the rotations work out. But I'm interested to see what the Astros do, because they haven't really had to go four deep in the starting rotation yet. Like Valdez, McCullers, I guess, or Keedy, so maybe they have. But I don't know. I respect that the Astros hitters have woken up. Springer's looked really good, right? As you said, Correa's looked really good. But I don't know, the Rays sort of have that smell, I guess. Even though the offense hasn't been spectacular, look who, as you said, an undrafted free agent hit that walk-off tonight. They don't have that one big superstar on their team. They don't have Mookie Betts. They don't have Aaron Judge. But they do have a lineup that can be platooned. And they're sneaky good, I guess. And I trust Kevin Cash more than anybody in baseball. I don't know. I'm still stuck on Yankees Rays, so it's a lot to take in for Astros Rays. But I'm going to lean Rays. I'm going to say Rays in 6 on this.
Yeah, I think it's just really simple. I think this is where the pitching in the else, because the World Series, remember, we're going to go back to days off. There's going to be days off after games 2 and after games 5. So it's going to be the typical, schedule that we get in a World Series. Teams are going to be able to kind of stack their relievers and their starters to really maximize those innings. The LCS, that's not going to be the case. And so I think if there was ever going to be a series where the Rays were really favored, it's going to be in a 7-game series against a team like the Astros, which just, they have just a huge pitching depth advantage. So as much as you could say this, I will be surprised if the Rays don't win the series for that reason, just because at some point I think that the Astros are just going to run out of arms and they're not going to be able to get outs. You know, we talked about this on our last podcast that like we might actually see teams kind of punt postseason games because they just don't have the pitching, that we might see a position player pitch. And I think that like if there was ever going to be a series at the time that we do it, it's going to be in the LCS this year of all years. And I just don't see where the Astros are going to get bulk from. And as you said, the Rays are still pretty well set up because they will have Snell and Morton for games 1 and 2 on, you know, at least regular rest.
All right. Before we move on, I cannot say enough. The average fastball is 97 miles an hour. How do you hit anything? The other series, I think it's going to be a blast. Like Braves, Dodgers in the NLCS. First, let's pour one out for the Padres, I guess, who were maybe the most fun team in baseball to watch, and also to the Marlins, who are a really good story. The Braves and Dodgers, neither one of them has lost a game so far. Right? This is going to be a lot of fun. As I was thinking about the series before, I think this is my favorite stat I found about them. If you were to look at hard hit rate, and that's what at StatCast is defined as being exit velocity of 95 miles an hour or more, the Dodgers and Braves were 1-2 in batting hard hit rate. And that makes sense. They tied with each other for the best slugging percentage in baseball at 483. So they hit the ball really hard. They were also 1-2 in pitching hard hit rate. So the Dodgers prevented hard hit better than anybody, and the Braves prevented it second best of anybody. You put those two things together, hit the ball really hard, don't let the other team hit the ball really hard. It seems to me like that's a recipe for success. And what do you say? Here they are playing each other in the postseason. And I got to say, you know, coming into the playoffs, what was the big weakness we said about the Braves? We said that the Braves' rotation was going to be kind of a weakness. And it hasn't been. Ian Anderson has thrown like 11 and two-thirds shutout innings. You know, Kyle Wright came up with 5 shutout innings the other day. I think, what do they have, 4 shutouts in 5 games? And the bullpen has been spectacular. Will Smith and Mark Melancon have faced 26 hitters, and they have struck out 26 hitters. I don't think that's sustainable, but that tells you a lot. Like, I feel better about the Braves now than I did 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, I mean, Ian Anderson in particular has really impressed me. You know, I was reading up his on MLB Pipeline, because I think he's still technically a prospect because he didn't lose his rookie eligibility. I was reading up on MLB Pipeline for a scouting report on him, and it was talking about his fastball breaking ball combination. And then I'm watching the game, you know, intently, and I'm seeing that he's like throwing his changeup more than his curveball. And I was like, huh, like he's really leaning on his changeup. That's kind of surprising. And then of course they in like the third inning, when he's like dominating, they cut to Tom Verducci, who does like it was almost like he read my mind. He was like, as it turns out, coming out of high school, the Braves drafted Anderson based on his fastball curveball combination. And then basically his first year in the minors, they said, here's the changeup grip we want you to throw, you know, go do this. And now he throws it an outstanding changeup. And I love that. I love that pitching profile of like the big right-hander with a power fastball and a changeup. He's fun to watch, and it's tough. I mean, he was in that same draft. He was the third pick in the 2016 draft, where Mickey Moniak was number one and Mike Brusso was undrafted. And he looks like the real deal, and definitely, a bit of an equalizer. I know that's a lot to put on a 22-year-old, when we're talking about going up against this Dodger lineup, but he looks to be the real deal. You, in fact, Mike, you know, on MLB.com, we always do these like position by position breakdowns. They're kind of fun and they're a little whimsical. They're not like, it's not necessarily the most like hardcore analysis, but I always think it paints a good picture of like how the teams kind of match up. And Mike, you know, wrote the NLCS piece. So I thought it might be fun to kind of go through some of the positions. You know, we were just talking about the starting pitchers. I mean, I still think let's go through the positions and kind of like a good way to kind of break down the entire series. I mean, if you go with the starting pitchers, I still think that the Dodgers have the edge just because of the starting pitching depth, but it's maybe a little closer than you think.
Well, I still think that's true with the, I mean, Clayton Kershaw, I know people like to talk about his history in the postseason, and like, fine, he's had some down moments. That first game against the Brewers, if you go by game score, is legitimately the second best postseason game in Dodger history, you know, and he was pretty good against the Padres as well. And Walker Buehler is what he is. And I know no Dodger fan really liked what Dave Roberts did with the pseudo opener with Dustin May in game three.
And to be fair, that's not just Dave Roberts, right? We know at this point that you know, front offices are helping make that decision.
Right. But everybody wanted to see Tony Gonsolin. I did too. Julio Urias was great. And, you know, you look at the Braves and, you know, obviously Soroka got hurt and that was a big blow. Max Fried was very good. Ian Anderson, you know, a 1.95 ERA in six starts and has pitched very well in the postseason. But, you know, Kyle Wright looked good the other day. I'm not sure that I actually trust him, you know, like he didn't look that good during the season. They're going to have to try to find a fourth starter. I'm still going to go with the Dodgers. But the interesting thing to me, I think, here is the bullpen, because this was a pretty good Dodger bullpen. They had the lowest bullpen ERA in baseball this year, even though it wasn't, you know, like their usual blow everybody away and get strikeouts. Like they actually had a really good ground ball rate. But man, Kenley Jansen, like again, in the second game, right? Like he couldn't finish it off and they had to bring in Joe Kelly. And I think maybe even more so than this Rays Yankees game, the end of that game was the most tense I've been for any game this year. Like that was hard to breathe. That was difficult to watch. And I don't know how you can trust Kenley Jansen to close things out. So like, even though there's a lot of talent down there, every single year, every postseason, it's something with the LA bullpen. The Braves put a ton of money last year into their bullpen and it's worked out. Smith has been really good. Mark Melanson's been good. Tyler Matzek, who's a fantastic story, we don't talk about him enough, was out of the league for the last 5 years because he couldn't throw strikes. He's faced 12 hitters this postseason. He struck out 8. Now, his teammates have started calling him the Death Star, presumably because they've never watched Star Wars until the end of the movie. Because, you know, nothing bad happened to the Death Star. But, excuse me, I think the Braves bullpen has the potential to be a difference maker for them, especially with some concern over Jansen and his velocity.
The Jansen thing is going to loom over the rest of the postseason for the Dodgers. Because that's, I mean, I went back and looked. I mean, the Dodgers, this was their 8th straight NL West title. And I went back the other day and I looked, and you know, I'm sure you're more well-versed in this because you follow the Dodgers closely. Like going back to 2013, their first of these 8, the only two players from then that are still on the team are Clayton Kershaw and Kenley Jansen. So it's, on the one hand, it's remarkable they've been able to kind of cab this run of 8 straight division titles with a ton of player turnover. That said, we've talked about a lot on this podcast is how fleeting reliever dominance can be. And the fact that Jansen has been as dominant as he has been for so long is remarkable. But it's clear that Davilo's down. And I think that as good as he his numbers for the 20, superficially, his numbers for the 2020 season look very good. So it's like, okay, look, he looks like the same old Jansen. But like in the last few weeks of the season, Davila was going down. Clearly, there's some trust right there that's kind of faded with Dave Roberts. And that's just tough as a manager to sort of like, if you're Dave Roberts, can you really, you know, in the middle of the postseason be like, actually, you know what? I don't want you pitching our highest leverage innings anymore. Sorry. So that's going to be a really tricky thing for Roberts to navigate. And I think that like, it's pretty clear that there are definitely questions about like whether Jansen is the guy to get those big outs. And it's weird to think the Braves might have that advantage.
Yeah, I can tell you this. If you were to ask a Dodger fan right now, do you trust Kenley Jansen? They'd hem and haw and say, I'm not so sure. But if you were to ask them, would you rather see Joe Kelly closing out games in the 9th inning? Absolutely not. He is, you know, hashtag great stuff for Joe Kelly. He's a tough watch. So I'll be interested. I mean, you know, Bruce Dark Rattle is a rookie. Victor Gonzalez is very good, but he's a rookie. There's talent. And I want to know, and I haven't seen anybody report this, and I'd really like to know why. Where is Jake McGee? You know, they got Jake McGee kind of off the scrap heap from Colorado, and they helped him increase his velocity and change his pitch mix a little bit. He's fantastic. In September, 16 strikeouts and 0 walks. But that is dominant. He has not pitched yet in the playoffs. You know, I don't have a great answer to this. You know, maybe the fact that he's a lefty and you have to worry about the 3-batter minimum comes into play, but he has not pitched yet. And that was stunning to me. But yeah, I don't know. After last year, after the way Juan Soto dominated and kept crushing homers when Adam Kolarik was available, who's a very good lefty-on-lefty guy, they don't really trust Roberts. And I don't trust Kenley Jansen. And I certainly don't trust Joe Kelly. This is going to be the problem spot, I think, more than anything. And I guess that feels like every October because it's always the problem spot. The other, you know, kind of positional matchups that stood out to me a little bit was catcher. where I tried my best to not have to pick an advantage. And I guess she sort of made me pick one, but they're pretty even. I mean, Will Smith is probably already the best hitting catcher in baseball, I think, even though he's young. And you know, if you look at his year, he had the same hard hit rate as Nelson Cruz, and he only struck out 22 times in 137 plate appearances, right? Meanwhile, Travis d'Arnaud, out of nowhere, mashed the ball. He had the second best hard hit rate in the game, behind only Fernando Tatis. He had two homers in the NLDS. And then behind them, they have two somewhat similar backups who are very good defensively, good framers, haven't hit all that much. That's mostly a tie to me, but I think that one's kind of fascinating because these are two of the four best hitting catching groups in baseball. And that's mostly due to Smith, a highly touted prospect, and d'Arnaud, who played one game for the Dodgers last year. You know, like that one's fascinating to me.
I'd probably give Smith the edge just because of youth, and he's kind of an ascendant player where d'Arnaud is impressive as he is. Like, you know, he's kind of mid to late career. That said, I mean, d'Arnaud has had a weird career. He was a huge prospect, although he was traded like three times as a prospect, which is usually like kind of a warning sign that maybe like a guy's not that good if teams, not that great of a prospect if teams are, I mean, I guess he was traded twice. He was traded to from the Phillies to the Blue Jays in the Roy Halladay trade, I think. And then from the Blue Jays to the Mets in the R.A. Dickey Syndergaard trade. It's kind of, he's got kind of a wild like trade tree in his own right. And he was always injury prone. And then in 2015 with the Mets, when they made their run in the second half, he was amazing. And like Cespedes got all the headlines, but like he was maybe as big of a factor in their run to the pennant. And then he was good in the playoffs, had a couple big home runs. And then basically couldn't stay on the field for a few years. The Mets cut him early in 2019, got one at bat with the Dodgers. Then they released him. And then he went to the Rays last year, and he was actually quietly pretty good. He hit 16 home runs. He hit 263, 323, 459. And he walked as a free agent and signed with the Braves. And he was, you know, looked like the guy, a better version of the guy that had like, you know, was that prospect to emerge with the Mets in 2005, in 2015 rather.
Yeah, absolutely. And I remember the timing of that being weird, right? That they'd kind of let him rehab for all this time and then gave him like 10 minutes of rope and then cut him free. And I know Mets fans haven't been super happy about that, but I'm very excited for Travis d'Arnaud, who has one plate appearance as a Dodger, coming up against the Dodgers in the World Series and, you know, sticking a dagger in their hearts. The other thing I think is going to be fun about this is that, you know, the Braves have a really good lineup. You know, like I don't need to tell anybody that Freddie Freeman is fantastic, right? Marcelo Ozuna and Ronald Acuna, that is going to be pretty fun if you think about, like, you know, Kershaw against that group, Bueller against that group, even Jansen if it gets that far. Like if you're looking for star power in the playoffs, those matchups are difficult to top. I don't think the other series is going to quite be like that, you know, because sure, the Astros have those big name hitters, but the pitchers aren't there anymore. The Rays aren't really built around star power. But this series, I think if you're looking for like Kershaw Freeman, like come up with a better pairing than that, you know, like that's sort of what I'm looking for. And then I guess the other thing here is what kind of series is this going to look like? You know, the Braves are coming now to Arlington where they hadn't yet played. And that I think we have seen that ballpark is enormous. As I joked on Twitter, it is coterminous with the state of Texas, which means it has the exact same boundaries of the entire state of Texas. We saw Will Smith, I think Muncy as well, crushed some balls that just did not go out there. And I don't think, you know, the Dodgers having played there gives them any sort of real advantage. But if you think about where the Braves just came from, you know, the short porch in Houston, that's got to be some kind of you know, weird adjustment, I guess, to go from one of those to the other. I don't know if that'll give the Dodgers an advantage, but it's something I've been thinking about anyway.
What's also interesting about the Dodgers is that they haven't really been, unlike most of the teams in this postseason, they haven't really been hitting a lot of home runs. I mean, I think Mookie Betts hits a double every time I turn on the TV, but they've actually sort of been moving the line more of a classic. I'm trying to pull up the numbers on the division series home runs. Yeah, they only hit one home run in the division series? That's kind of wild.
Well, Bellinger hit one, right? Is that the only one you got?
That was it.
Really? Oh yeah, you're right. Well, yeah, I guess you're right. I'm not trying to refute you, but I also can't think of any because
they've hit two home runs in the postseason in five games.
The Dodgers in the division series had a 409 on base and a 406 slugging.
But I mean, with the way, I mean, it's kind of too early to tell what the, you know, exactly how that park's going to play, but it definitely looks like the ball does not really carry that well there and is pretty spacious. So, I mean, the Dodgers obviously had no trouble scoring runs there against the beleaguered Pirates pitching staff. So they'll have a little bit of a tougher
Padres,
yes. they'll have a little bit of a tougher go against the Braves. Let's quickly go through the other positions because I think it's interesting to kind of look at it. Obviously, first base, Freddie Freeman is, you know, maybe the MVP of the National League, so he definitely gets an edge over Max Muncy, and that's not really an insult to Muncy, right?
Muncy didn't have a great year this year, to be honest, but even if he did, he's not Freddie Freeman.
Exactly. Second base, I think, is interesting because off the top of my head, I would think Ozzie Albies, just sort of reputation-wise. It's like, oh, Ozzie Albies. But Chris Taylor has really emerged as the regular second baseman and has been, I guess, kind of quietly really good. I only say quietly because the Dodgers have so much star power, it's kind of easy to get overlooked.
Well, he wasn't even supposed to be the guy. You know, that was supposed to be Gavin Lux. And Lux really just never got his season going. You know, he didn't start the season on the team, hasn't been on the active roster for all the playoffs. And Taylor's been actually, like, surprisingly good. You know, he's been an above average hitter in each of his four full years with the Dodgers, and Albies kind of took a step back. The other one that's fascinated me is at shortstop, where Swanson had a pretty good year for the Braves, but wow, Seager basically hit like an MVP and continued doing so in the postseason, right? Like he was the second best hitting shortstop in baseball this year. This is kind of another one where it's like, hey, no disrespect to Dansby Swanson, you're pretty good, but wow, look at Corey Seager. You know, that one's a pretty easy edge to me, I think.
And I give Swanson, you know, a lot of credit. He's really developed the last couple of years. Like, that is, I mean, he was the number one overall pick in the draft in 2015. In his rookie year, he came up and it looked like he was going to be a star. And then the next couple of years, he just didn't really drive the ball at all. In 2017, his expected slugging was .350. Then it was .365. In the last 2 years, it's been close to .500 and pretty consistently. His hard hit rate's been consistent, as well as his strikeout rate, his walk rate. He's really become a very good player. Kind of, I mean, maybe not exactly what you'd expect from the number one overall pick in the draft, but like, you know, a legitimate, like, above average major league player.
Can I sell you, as I move on to third base here, on Justin Turner as West Coast Freddie Freeman? And I say that because obviously their career trajectories are different. You know, Freeman came up at 20 years old for the Braves and has been there ever since. And he was a, you know, second round pick, well-regarded prospect, and has been a star there for a decade. But when I think of Freeman, what I mostly think about is consistency, right? Like before this year, we had a fantastic year this year, but before this year, he was consistently, you know, very good every single year, but never was like, you know, top player in the league, never had a bad year. And that's sort of what happened with Turner. Like, we are 7 years now past Turner being the guy the Mets non-tendered and turning into a star. And if you were to look at Turner as a Dodger, he's had a 139 OPS plus. And if you were to look at Freeman for his career, it's got a 139 OPS plus. You know, they never have bad years. They're both very good this year. I know this is maybe, you know, they're not the same player. They play at different sides of the infield, and Freeman might end up in the Hall of Fame where Turner will almost certainly not. But I don't know. I feel like there's some similarities there.
I see what you're saying. And Turner's consistency since coming to the Dodgers is remarkable. He's had a great career. I think it's fair to say at this point, he's a free agent this offseason. I don't even know. I assume he's just going to end up back with the Dodgers in some capacity. It just seems like kind of a natural fit, although he doesn't really move that well anymore. So if there's not a DH, it might be a little harder to keep him on the roster. I guess we can talk about that in a future podcast, but it is interesting knowing that, like, you know, this could be theoretically his last run with the Dodgers.
It's tough for me to see him moving on. You know, he's from the area, lives not far from the park. He's been so successful there, obviously. And I do think they will have the DH, you know, next year. And even if not, he can play a little bit of first base. They move Muncy around. I think if he wants to be there, they will be happy to find a spot for him. Just moving on to the outfield here, you know, Adam Duvall's fine, but AJ Pollock's been really good. And Chris Taylor kind of ends up in left field for defense as well. So much as I like AJ Pollock, and he's got some nice power, he's a sneaky good defender at a 301 on base. So, you know, I think the Dodgers have a little bit of an edge out there, both with versatility and just talent. I hated having to do this for center field, by the way. Cody Bellinger versus Ronald Acuna. What kind of choice is that? Especially after Bellinger made that incredible play and had hit a home run in the same game. He didn't have a great year. I went with Acuna. There's not much of an edge here because, like, look at those two guys. But yeah, I guess you got to go with Acuña.
Yeah, I think so. Based on the, as you said, based on the year that Bellinger had, but it's definitely, it's close. And if you were, you know, if you were drafting players to build a franchise around for the next 10 years, they'd be two of the top, you know, 10 picks, and you probably could pull all 30 GMs and you might get like a 15-15 split. So it's a tough one, but I agree with you that Acuña gets a slight edge for the reasons you mentioned. And then in right field, you know, that's maybe the biggest blowout in this yeah. exercise.
Mookie Betts is Mookie Betts
versus Nick Marquez. Yeah.
Who was not very good after coming back. I mean, not surprisingly, right? Like a very disjointed season for him.
Oh, and obviously there's DH, where Marcelo Zuna is kind of like one of the, sure. like the true DHs of 2020, and certainly probably gets the edge there.
Yeah, no, I agree with you on that for sure. I'm more excited for this series than the other one. I mean, they're both going to be really good, right? But in different ways, because I don't think the Astros are a great team. I think the Rays are. I think the Dodgers are. And I think the Braves are very close to being. And especially because what we said earlier, you know, I feel a lot better about Atlanta's pitching now than I did a week or two ago. I still feel like the Dodgers, you know, they're the best team in baseball this year, as they are every year. The mild concern in the bullpen, but it's not like I've seen a lot this postseason to make me doubt them. I will assume the Dodger bullpen will screw this up in some way to cost them a game, because I'm not blind and I've watched baseball over the last 7 years. And I think the Braves, you know, they'll crush enough to win another game or two and get, you know, Max Fried or Anderson will pitch well. I think this is going seven, but I think the Dodgers are going to win.
I mean, I picked the Braves. I picked a Braves-Rays World Series before the season began, and then I stuck with it as my prediction before the playoffs began. So I feel like I kind of have to stick with the Braves. So I will stick with the Braves and say Braves in seven. I'll go with Rays in five. I don't think I get my games in the first one, so I'll say Rays in five for the ALCS. My biggest concern with the Dodgers is not necessarily the personnel of the bullpen. It's how it's managed. Because I think right now, and trust me, I think it's really hard to manage, especially in this day and age when you're getting a lot of pressure from the front office. The dynamics of trying to manage a game are very different than they were in previous eras. But it does kind of feel like Dave Roberts might be in his own head a little bit. And I think that's going to be, if they're early in the series, there's a meltdown, especially if it's a Jansen meltdown, that could have some reverberations throughout the series. So I'm going to say Braves in seven, mostly just because I want to stick with my preseason pick and look smart when I get a Braves Rays World Series. Although I think most neutral fans are probably rooting for that Dodgers Astros rematch, where there'd be a lot of
God. Oh God, I don't think I'm prepared for that. Honestly,
that would be something. I mean, the script writers would really be working overtime if they get us an Astros Dodgers World Series rematch this year.
I understand the appeal. Obviously, I do. I understand the hate watching appeal. I'm pretty down on the Astros trying to play like the redemption card here. You know, like a couple of guys have talked about it like that, and I get it. If you win this year, I think you'll get credit for that in some sense. Like, yeah, nobody's aware of anything untoward happening right now, and there's still a good team full of good players. It will not rectify what happened in 2017. Literally nothing they can do can make that better whatsoever. So would Dodgers Astros be more interesting than Dodgers Rays to a lot of people? Yeah, not to me. I know everybody wanted Dodgers Yankees. That would have been cool. But no, man, give me Dodgers Rays. Give me Dodgers Rays. I don't want Dodgers Astros. I mean, nobody wants that.
I just want more games like we had tonight. I want more games like we had in game two between the Padres and the Dodgers. That's, you know, that's what I'm hoping for. Tonight was like good for the baseball fans' soul. It was a really well-played game. It was great storylines, great performances, and here's to more of that.
Yeah, this postseason has been really fun, by the way, and it's a minor miracle we got this far and that we are lucky enough to have baseball. I mean, the postseason, you know, if whether you like the format or not, it's been a blast. Like, so many good games and so many good memories, and I am very interested to see how this goes. All right, so I'm going to go with the Dodgers-Rays World Series, and I'm almost certainly going to be wrong. Matt is going to go with Rays Braves, the Southeastern, I guess, battle.
Got to ride with it, you know. I've been preaching it since mid-July. Got to keep going with it.
All right. Well, I hope one of us is right. Thank you all to listening to our emergency late night podcast. This is the MLB.com Ballpark Dimensions podcast. We'll be back next week-ish with a World Series preview once these LCS wrap up. Thanks for listening.